No. I'm Stephen.
Okay, well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And we're here, as always, to talk about A Course in Miracles. And we're going to be talking about one of the frequently asked questions, which I'm going to paste into the room so y'all can go there and join us. Here we go. There's the link. And so, yes, this is live. Cheryl is asking. It is live and not Memorex. So in that case, I want to hear the voice of Bruce saying,
Memorex? Say.
No, this is actually recording. No.
I haven't thought that in a long time. Good morning.
You?
Well, I'm good. Thanks. And yourself?
I'm good, too. Are you guys all ready for Christmas?
Oh yeah, we're not going anywhere, so we're just gonna have our neighbors over and vice versa. We kind of freshly moved, so it's like, well, it's time to stay put and get acquainted with our new community. So,
well, good for you. That's awesome. I love that.
We're gonna probably call a lot of family and friends, things like that.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, it's kind of nice to just be in a new place and hang out. So that's what we're mostly gonna do. Yeah. How about you?
Well, we're almost ready. We went out yesterday to the mall, and I remembered, thank you, Cheryl, who has been bringing some Joe Vitale and Dr. Yu Lin into our lives. And so I've been doing a lot of Ho'oponopono, which has been also helpful to me. I mean, it really is a forgiveness practice that is very simple to use. And whether you're into it or not, you can definitely use it. And you know, I found myself getting very frustrated and angry and, you know, having all those feelings that are really, you know, ego throwing a temper tantrum. And just, you know, backed off, just went back and went into, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Not to the person who's, you know, causing the disruption, but to my own mind so that I could be calm. Because what I've found is that when you are a calm and centered person in the midst of much chaos, it becomes a vibration or something that kind of goes out to help, other people to be less fearful. And that's true. You know, if you are connected with your source, then you are going to be radiating something that is going to either make people very happy and calm, or make people afraid because they don't know what is it? What are you doing? What do you got? But you know, in reality, that you do it for yourself, because we're the only ones. I'm the only one that I have to do anything for. I do it for myself so that I can be more open to the Holy Spirit to give me advice and tell me what to do. And, you know, it was even interesting. I was shopping and I bought something. I was like, I was going to buy it. I was given kind of a, yeah, this is perfect. And I thought, well, I don't know. But I just listened to the voice, the inner voice that said, don't be confused. Don't try to make a different choice. Just take the choice you've already made because it's the perfect one. And it really helped me a lot to have that. So anyway, we still have to go shopping today, but because, you know, unfortunately the mall was not the place where they had the stuff I wanted. So but it really is just such a great thing. Forgiveness is so helpful to every one of us. If we would just practice it, you find that your life changes and your thinking changes. So anyway, so that's what's going on with me. So, I mean, forgiveness really does work.
It does.
Of course, miracles really does work. So, you know, that's, you know, if it didn't have, if it, I mean, and what does Jesus say? If it were not that, you know, angels come to help you and the forces of the universe come to help you. And if it were not for that, you would have a really tough road. But there are beings who we don't really know or understand, but are still part of the sonship that are here. And maybe we make them up as we go along so that they'll be here for us. I don't know, but they are here.
Sounds like a good premise to me.
Yeah, I guess so. So anyway, we're on question 1247 from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles Outreach, which I posted the link if you want to go. It's facimoutreach.org/QA/question267.html/Q1247. I hope you got that all down. Anyway, so do you want to start reading?
Sure. Before we do, though, I just wanted to comment since you mentioned the Ho'oponopono, which I haven't really studied, but I really only know the four questions and just a little bit of this backstory behind it of the gentleman who began that, and the success he had. And I believe it was a mental hospital with that practice. I think anything like that where if you find it helpful, why not use it? I Googled it real quickly and found that the list of the four statements, which really basically is repentance or remorse, if you will, of recognizing that what you're, you know, the approach that you've been using hasn't working, which is really kind of the first step of the three steps of forgiveness is recognition, you know, the revelation, recognition that our individual attempts at happiness aren't going to cut it ever. And then the second step is just, you know, please forgive me, which is like you say, Lynn, it's really asking ourselves to direct our attention to our decision-making mind to forgive ourselves for having made up in our minds only a dream choice for a thought system that hasn't worked for us. And then the third and fourth steps, the gratitude and the love, become automatic, because when we let go of what's unreal, what reality is always there waiting for us to flood the empty space in our minds that's left after we release what's not real. And I was also kind of reminding, well, there's four statements, but there's also four others that I remember. Years ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing on community radio in Northern California. A fellow might be familiar with some of the people listening, named Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements. And again, there's you know, four real simple things that can remind us to not take our dream world seriously and to practice forgiveness. And those are, you know, be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions and always do your best. And I think those have a lot to do with, the metaphysics of being kind to yourself and inclusion. If you're impeccable with your word, if you really follow, you know, any these little gems, and these little quick maxims, if you will, that have a lot of heart and truth to them, you can realize that, you know, they with the right mindset, with the right inner teacher, any tool like this can be helpful, because it really doesn't depend on anything external. And so we can use anything that seems to be external as a reminder or as a symbolic, trigger for getting to that part of our mind. So for, in terms of like being impeccable with your word, is just saying, well, if I'm true, then my everything will reflect that truthfulness, and that integrity and that honesty by being, recognizing that the truth of what we all are has nothing to do with any specifics. And so, you know, speaking from that or relating to it or thinking from that, because the word in our mind is just as important as the word that comes out of our mouth, that then becomes a mechanism for being impeccable, because there's nothing to peck. there's nothing out there to be attacked or to attack, including the seeming separate self that we think we are. Not taking anything personally, the second one is a great one, because if we're not a separate person, there's nothing to take personally. Making assumptions, well, that's the whole ego's entire cosmos is an assumption. So if we can let go of our addiction to making the assumption that we're a separate self, then that changes everything. And always do your best is just being kind to yourself. You know, that's, I think that's a huge part of A Course in Miracles. And that's why Ken Wapnick emphasizes in one of his commentaries on fairly early workbook lesson that, you know, he kind of stops mid lesson and says, you know, when you find yourself being, unwilling, to do and having resistance to doing the lesson, stop and just say, hey, you know, you can come back to it later. It's going to be there. You know, you don't have to beat yourself up. And I think that's the whole point, is if we don't beat ourselves up, then we will automatically present our best effort. And then if what we think of as our best effort isn't to our liking, that's in itself a helpful reminder that self that we're identifying with, again, isn't working for us. So any of these little, you know, quick, simplified systems that if you really examine, again, how to practice them with the thought system of inclusion and forgiveness and kindness, they become a whole different thing, don't they?
Absolutely. And, I was really into the Four Agreements for a long time too. And it was at the same time I had just recently found the course. And so, you know, I was really, trying to do the workbook and all that kind of stuff. But, and I found that Four Agreements. I said, oh, this is simpler. And, you know, I did try that for quite a while. And in fact, I bought those books, and I probably bought 20 of those books, and I handed them out to everybody at work that was giving me a hard time. Everybody at work that I didn't like and was really being mean to me. I gave them a Four Agreements book because, you know, that was my answer to their
stuff.
They're upset. Instead of me reading the Four Agreements book and doing what the Four Agreements said, it's much easier to affect them. And I heard Tara Brach the other night. She was saying there was a cartoon, and it was two places, or maybe it was Dr. Hulin or Joe Wolf, or not Joe Wolf, Joe Vitale, who was saying, I think it was there was two different books in the bookstore, and the one person was looking at was How to Fix Yourself, and right behind him was a whole rows and rows of books about how to fix other people. And that's where everybody was going. Was to, you know, one was how, you know, the How to Fix Yourself, A Course in Miracles, and then, you know, you turn around and it's How to Fix Other People, and it's so much nicer to think about fixing other people so they aren't treating me the way that I don't like. So yeah, I gave them all Four Agreements, and I also gave them all let's see, which one was the first Byron Katie book. I think 1,000 Names for Joy, one of the first Byron Katie books. I read that and I was like, oh yes, this is it. And so again, you know, I, you know, bought a bunch of Byron Katie and gave it to all the assholes at work. And, you know, it seriously didn't change them at all. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just trying to help you out here. You know, not realizing how incredibly arrogant that was of me. And, how again, I was, you know, looking at the rows of books that say how to fix everybody else, how to fix the world, how to make everything better so that I don't suffer anymore, instead of looking at, my own mind. It took a long time for me to realize, actually realize that A Course in Miracles was about my mind and not anybody else. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was because I was just kind of by myself. I didn't even know any people. The only people I knew that did A Course in Miracles were Ozzy and, you know, Gary Renard were the only people I had ever met who did The Course in Miracles. So that was my whole, you know, my whole community was Ozzy, Marie, and Gary.
But, that's a pretty good place to start.
That's like the most amazing place to start, isn't it? But, you know, it took a while. And, you know, obviously, what is this? 2016. So, oh, my God. I can't believe it. I've been studying the course for, like, you know, 14 years.
There you go.
Or 13 years. Yeah, 13 years. 2003 was when I first picked it up. So, you know, and finally I'm getting it. It's all about me. It's all about me and how I do. So, my relationship with Jesus. And so, so I'll start reading this question.
Okay. Okay.
And, see how does this fit with, this discussion? okay. So question 1247. I have become aware that the helpful yet needy relationship I have been developing with Jesus as a teacher, friend, guide, elder brother, comforter is changing to something that I would like to try to describe. My question is whether there is a normal part of the process of learning and growing toward the goals of A Course in Miracles. Whether this is a normal part of the process, I bet one of their first things is going to say, what is normal? You think, you know, your relationship with Jesus is changing, you know, what is normal? Okay, back to the question. Rather than representing solely the above roles as a teacher and guide, healer, you know, all that, I now seem to grasp that Jesus is a symbol that is not all at all specific or limited. I sense that the content of the right mind is really a reflection of what I denied when the so-called dream of separation began, and like its source, the abstract content of the right mind merely is. The abstract content of the right mind merely is. Therefore, I can better understand that Jesus or the Holy Spirit really do nothing. Somehow, in some way that I do not understand, my mind opens a little and allows or accepts some experience of what we call truth, love, peace, atonement. And it is that experience, quote, in brackets, the miracle, that corrects and cancels out my errors in perception if I sincerely desire to let them go. What I am recognizing is that I am the one doing all the work, that my progress really is up to me, and I am more aware of the meaning of, quote, a little willingness to take responsibility when choosing my ego. Somewhere in your writings or tapes, there is something about eventually growing up in our dependent relationship with our elder brother, Jesus. What do you make of this seeming change in my needy relationship with Jesus? I'm not just trying to kick him out again, am I? Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, I'm growing up and now I'm kicking out my elder brother who's been my advisor all these years. And, you know, I think we all kind of know the answer to this question. But it is a good question because, you know, what happens when we give up the crutch? What happens when we give up the thing that's been holding us together? You know, what would happen if I didn't talk to Jesus when I was finding myself in a stressful place? Or if I just went immediately to my Ho'oponopono place, which that's a crutch too. Four agreements, that's a crutch too. The work, that's a crutch too. You know, all of these things, you know, I'm almost thinking that you just kind of go from one to another until you realize that you don't need one at all. But, But it's an interesting question, and it's an interesting thought system, because really what I see is going from the two minds of, you know, you, me and Jesus, Jesus and me, to the one mind, which is, I can just accept, and I can just be, and I don't have to judge or worry about or try to change or try to make anything happen. I just need to have this little willingness, because, you know, it's like I think I might have mentioned this last week. I got this real inspiration, you know, recognizing that, you know, because people are saying, let's awaken the sleeping Christ within you. You know, let me waken the sleeping Christ within. Well, Christ is never sleeping and has never been sleeping. There's no reason to try to wake him up. It just annoys him.
or annoys our misconception of that essence, right?
Exactly. So it really is just me, you know, and, you know, I'm recognizing that more and more as well. So, anyway, I'm going to shut up and, let you talk and maybe start reading the answer.
Okay. Okay. That's it really is a good question, isn't it? I think it's a good example of, you know, one of the many, many ways that we use duality and, you know, a sense of separation to block the peace that we really know is our birthright and everyone's birthright. And it's just silly. I mean, like, I love how Ken Wapnick keeps coming back to that phrase or word and, you know, that idea that it's just silly to believe it's, you know, not evil, sinful, or wicked. It's just a innocently foolish mistake that we can correct. I'm reflecting on a movie that we watched last night that had some interesting questions, and it basically talked about a person who was very strong-willed and independent and kind of thought they had it all figured out, and then was basically forced to confront the idea that, well, maybe he didn't have it all figured out. It's called Captain Fantastic. I don't know if you've seen that. Have you seen that one yet? It's an interesting film, ties into the whole, you know, survivalist as well as self-sufficient kind of thinking. But anything that has to do with kind of doing it on our own, out of contact with everyone and everything else, is just another way of looking at that. But that's our relationship with our elder brother Jesus, as in our relationship with any symbol that we take with us into the dream that represents our awareness of oneness, our awareness of interconnectedness and relationship that is inseparable, that, you know, couldn't possibly be compromised or damaged or diminished in any way. That symbolic awareness we can't possibly lose. It's going to be there waiting for us whenever we're ready to welcome it back in. So I'll go ahead and start reading the answer. This is FAQ number 1247 that's provided by the folks at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And this one starts out, what you describe seems to be the natural transition that should take place, meaning, you know, relinquishing the symbol and replacing the placeholder, the training wheels of a symbol of a person with the indwelling presence of that awareness. That's how I put it anyway. I'll continue now. The spiritual path of A Course in Miracles is a journey leading us back to the oneness of perfect love that we believe we shattered by desiring our own special individualized existence. Therefore, any semblance of separation must eventually disappear in our minds if we are to regain our true identity as Christ and return home to God. Relating to Jesus as an older, wiser brother is a wonderful starting point on our journey. He even asks us to relate to him that way. and to learn how to trust him unconditionally, acknowledging that he knows what is in our best interests and we do not. The we being the little seeming separate selves that are trying to do it on our own, the John Wayne way, or in this case, the movie we watched last night, you know, the Captain Fantastic way. Not that there isn't, you know, merit to, trying to, do things, and to be proficient and all that kind of stuff. But it's the motive. Why are we doing anything? Anyway, at that level, we still see ourselves as separate from him and very much dependent on him. That is as it should be. But it is just the beginning stage of the relationship, and he does not want us to remain at that level of spiritual childhood. Interestingly enough, this reminded me of one of the items that Ken talked about as a child, a man, and then a spirit, which is an article that Ken wrote in an article in the Lighthouse series that he did. And I was thinking of that, and then I happened to glance down the page because I hadn't read the answer here, and I noticed in the last paragraph it discusses that. But that's kind of the progression, isn't it? We go from the infancy through childhood through maturity, and then finally, to the recognition that everything that seems to be outside of us is really a symbol. And I think that it's important, and nothing wrong with recognizing that that's actually an advance, not that there's advanced or not advanced in truth, but in terms of a typical relinquishment of the belief.
Mature.
Yeah, mature. Yeah, exactly. That's a mature awareness that leads us consistently to the understanding that anything that we see outside ourselves is just a representation or a helpful reminder of an inner state, an outward picture of an inner condition. And when you mentioned mature, it also reminded me of there's an Aramaic scholar, is it Neil Donald Klotz, I think is his name. Anyway, who I heard in an interview years ago, and he had said something that really stuck with me, that he says the Aramaic word for, I think it's evil, is basically translated from, what appears in our Christian Bible, but if the Aramaic word actually meant unripe or immature. And I thought, wow, that's interesting, because that basically, changes the whole context of something that's worthy of condemnation to something that's worthy of compassion. Because, you wouldn't expect a kid that's, 5 years old to be proficient in brain surgery or a 3-year-old to have mastery of the musical skills of a Mozart or someone versed in quantum physics or a PhD in whatever. But that's, in a sense, kind of what we kind of expect of ourselves when we don't allow ourselves the patience to grow into this awareness that there's nothing outside of ourselves. And I think that's, what this FAQ addresses very nicely, is that, why not use the symbols? The two examples that we started out the conversation this morning with of two different spiritual teacher systems that have four short phrases that are easily memorized and that have, some significance to the ideas behind them can be helpful. Again, with the right teacher, anything can be a way to get back to that awareness. And then that teacher, of course, is really just the awareness that we took with us into the dream that is symbolized by seeming specifics, in this case, Jesus. Do you want to comment on that or jump into the next paragraph?
I would like to comment on that because it is that maturity and that level of maturity that somehow or the other I expect other people to live up to, and especially if they've been studying the course for a long time, or they have whatever kinds of thinking that you would think would bring them to a point where they'd have some kind of wisdom, and they would not be judging, and they would have the right answers, and you have all these assumptions of what a person can and cannot and should or shouldn't or whatever. And, you know, so you expect other people to be better or act better than, or me anyway, I expect other people to act better, even though I don't expect that for myself. And, you know, I do know people who have been studying the course for, you know, 30, 35 years, you know, or, you know, since it first, you know, came out, and are still just like, you know, looking externally for their answers and you know, judging, you know, people and circumstances as being unkind or unloving or, you know, whatever kinds of, excuse me, whatever kinds of thinking that, you know, people just naturally evolve to, if they don't have something like the Course in Forgiveness to guide them. And so, you know, I look at these people and I think, well, what's going on with you? How come you've been doing this for 40 years and you still don't understand the basics of forgiveness, or you still don't understand the basics of, you know, accepting the atonement for yourself? Or, you know, I have all these judgments about, you know, what I consider to be mature, and where I expect people to be if they have been studying the Course in Miracles consistently. And wouldn't you know that all those judgments have to do with where I think I am now compared to, you know.
Funny how that works out.
It kind of works out that way. So, you know, really even looking at my own thinking and recognizing that, you know, what I consider being mature in the Course is not where I'm at either. And, you know, not that I'm in a bad place, but just not, as I'm just not where I expect myself to be. And so, you know, I'm judging other people, you know, maybe because they're a teacher and they're going out and teaching workshops and seminars. And, you know, I listen to them and I think, well, you don't even know the basics of the Course. What the hell are you talking about? You know, these are the places that, you know, instead of looking at them and their teaching, their action, their behavior, I just need to look at my own self, mm-hmm. my own thinking, my own actions, my own behaviors, and see where they're not in alignment with what Jesus is talking about here, or what the Course is talking about. And then I don't have any basis to judge them or to dislike what they're doing or to wish they were doing something else or to want to tell them, hey, grow up. You know, I don't have any basis for that at all, because I recognize that all that, my entire vision of the world and what is happening in the world is just that. It's my own projection. And it really has nothing to do with any other person. So that person may be doing the Course perfectly. And when I go and listen to them, what I hear is interpreted by my ego as being less than perfect. And then, you know, I feel like I'm in a position to judge. So, you know, if I can't catch myself there, that just seems so blatant and so obvious. And yet, you know, how often do I go there and it doesn't seem obvious to me at all? It just seems like, well, yeah, I'm right and they're wrong. And, and so that maturity, it really is in my mind, but I have not, I don't let that be my guide. And, something that's fairly new for me, you know, doing this, the Ho'oponopono or doing whatever practices, the work or whatever, is to recognize that the only guide that is going to, be able to use this, I could be using anything. I could be using the Lord's Prayer or the Rosary to do the same thing. It's not the words. It's not the form. It's, you know, whatever my own internal guide, which I don't see as a different person or Jesus or, you know, anything like that. That's really, who I need to be listening to. Mm-hmm. And that's the one who tells me in the mall, hey, just sit down, take some breaths, calm yourself, and be a center of peace instead of being a center of confusion. And so, I mean, honestly, anytime if I think that something outside of me is cause and an effect, I'm wrong. And even if the effect seems obvious and other people agree with it, I'm wrong. Nothing outside of me is causing an effect. It's all coming from within. And so the only place that it can be fixed or changed or helped or made more open to the Christ, it's going to help me if I let it by accepting it and not rejecting, and accepting and not rejecting. So anyway, long story short, it's all up to me. And whatever else I use.
Yeah, it's up to the decision maker in our mind, and which is, as of course, in Miracles, I think helps remind us that that's not the Lynn or the Bruce. That is really the place in our mind where we made up a belief that we had decided against perfect oneness somehow, and then we made up a whole universe to obfuscate and hide out and try to, you know, reconcile a fugitive identity that seemed to arise from that decision, but none of that happened. And I don't think we really get that until, you know, farther along, and then we see that it's just, there really isn't anything there to be upset about, but that's not where we think we are most of the time. So we need to use the symbols that we're comfortable with and that are helpful. And some other culture, it may be, you know, maybe an Eastern sage or a, you know, people that, you know, are in the Indian subcontinent, maybe, Ramana Maharshi or Nisargadatta or one of those kind of sages that speaks more clearly than a Western modality. But in any case, it's all a matter of just finding what works and sticking with it until we are able to kick away the training wheels and, you know, jettison the external support. But that's, you know, really kind of a later stage in the journey.
A way later stage.
Yeah.
In the journey. Yeah. But how many times have you heard, and maybe you don't hear it, but I hear it every day in this room, every day, probably two or three times, you know, a teacher will bring up lesson 189, paragraph, whatever, put down this course, put down this world, and come to your God with holy empty hands. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're like, oh, I'm putting down the course. And, you know, the question I ask is, did you put down the world? Have you forgiven completely the world, and you have no more judgments against the world, no more grievance, no more, you know, everything, you've completely aligned yourself with the Holy Spirit and are no longer in the world, and the Holy Spirit is guiding your every move, and you don't have to worry about what to say or what to do. Has that happened to you? Because that's what happened to Jesus. And he was able to then do things like turn water into wine and walk through walls and be risen from the dead. So if you think you're at that point, go ahead and put this course down.
Yeah. go ahead.
If you don't think you're at that point, if you really be honest with yourself, then you've still got some work to do, Lucy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I figure. And I always am quick to remind myself whenever I hear that, like you say, you know, being bannered around as a suggestion to, you know, walk away from the curriculum. It's like, well, yeah, maybe not so quickly. I like to, in that last sentence of that, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th paragraph of lesson 189, which is actually a really wonderful meditation. And we use that frequently in our Wednesday online study group. And there's a lot to it, but I think the sequence to me is real important. It's forget this world, forget this course, and come with holy empty hands unto your God, which to me is like, okay, well, if you forget the world, then you're forgetting the inner and outer shields of oblivion. which you're loosening your mind's grip on that. And if you've done that, then yeah, okay, sure, you're ready. You've completed the curriculum. but until that point, I think it's good to use the tools that we're given. And in our case, probably true for anybody listening to this, if you're tuning in right now, if you've been drawn to A Course in Miracles and that, you know, it is your spiritual path, then why not stick with that? Not get attached to the form, not be, you know, dogmatic and rote with it, but just, you know, make that, a daily practice and ideally, have it find its way, not in any kind of a forced way, but in a very organic, systemic way to all of the thinking, to where, you know, our thoughts about the world are transformed, both inwardly and outwardly. And I think we're reminded that it's all within, because there is no out there, as physicist John Wheeler says. And then eventually, you know, we get to the point where we say, okay, well, yeah, now I'm ready to drop it. But that's, you know, right before you, you know, walk up to the podium and get your diploma, so to speak. You know? But anyway, so yeah, a good reminder. Good reminder. Yeah. So, should we read the next paragraph?
Yeah, you want to go ahead and read the next paragraph?
Sure. Thus, at one point he says, I will teach with you and live with you if you will think with me. But my goal will always be to absolve you finally from the need for a teacher. That's from chapter 4, section 1, paragraph 6, sentence 3 in the text. And that's the beauty of anything that's true that leads us to the truth, will have an exit strategy. And that's where, you know, yeah, eventually, you know, you don't need to carry the staircase on your shoulders, you know, leave it for the next person, you know, the training wheels will drop off, the booster, tanks will fall off the rocket and, at this right point in time, but you don't want to get rid of those prematurely. Okay, he goes on. He wants us to become what he is, something he expresses early in the text. There is nothing about me that you cannot attain. I have nothing that does not come from God. The difference between us now is that I have nothing else. This leaves me in a state which is only potential in you. So basically, it's an acknowledgement of the fact that we're, you know, pretty mixed up, because we go back and forth, we vacillate and equivocate between two thought systems that are diametrically opposed all the time. And in recognition of that, you know, we just need to be gentle and patient with ourselves as we go through that process and realize, oh, okay, there I did for, you know, a few minutes or a few days or years even, you know, lapsed into a state where I was blaming the world and feeling victimized by my own projections and how silly that is. Okay. He goes on, I am in no way separate or different from you except in time, and time does not really exist. And near the end of the workbook, he speaks very movingly of our oneness with him. Yet in the final days of this 1 year we gave together, you and I, we found a single purpose that we shared, and thus you join with me, so what I am are you as well. And that's from workbook lesson 14. So.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to mention all the three of these things that they pointed out here. First was from text chapter 4.
Uh-huh.
Which is like very early on. You haven't even got to chapter 5 yet.
Uh-huh.
text chapter 1, mm-hmm. which is like in the very, very, very beginning. And then workbook lesson number 14, which again is in the
pretty
early on.
Yeah.
So here are, you know, like, the early warning system, you know, basically, you know, he's saying, I've been telling you this all along, basically. And I love that they were able to bring these things together here to show us, you know, that it's not like you have to read and study and dissect the course and, you know, write scholarly books about it in order to get this. you can get this as easily as reading the first miracle principle. Mm-hmm. You could get this as easily by reading the first lesson. You know, you can get this as easily from, you know, I mean, so many places in there. So, you know, he's, you know, pointed out over and over and over and over. And, you know, why haven't I, you know, gotten to the point where, you know, because he does say, I think it's also in chapter 4, might be chapter 8, where he says, you know, I'll substitute for your ego if you let me. I'll do everything that you think you need to do if you let me. You don't have to do a dang thing. You can just let me do it. And, you know, of course you will. You'll get up and go to the store. You'll go to the mall. You'll talk to people. You'll go to work. You'll do all the things that you're doing. But you won't be doing it. I'll be doing it. You know, Jesus is saying, I'll be doing it. Well, he's not saying he personally, Jesus, is going to go to my work and do my job. He's saying, when I let my mind be Christ, guided by the Christ's mind, that I'm no longer in charge of anything. And, you know, that's what these final lessons that are coming up in the workbook are all about. You know, be you in charge. You know, it's really turning over my will to God's will, my will to, you know, spirit or whatever, and letting them be in charge. You know, that's, excuse me. When I do that, when in the future, I do that, then I will no longer have to worry about what to say or what to do, where to go, because it will all be being done for me, through this physical entity that appears to be Lynn, Christ will be. And so, you know, and, you know, he says, when you learn to decide with me, your life will be so easy. You'll be like you're being carried down a path on a summer's day. I won't just tell you how to do it. I will do it for you. So this is, the whole Jesus telling us, you don't have to do anything. Really, honestly, all you have to do is surrender your mind, surrender your thinking to the atonement. And call upon the atonement for everything. Call upon the miracle for everything.
And it's also pointed out that relinquishment is not giving up anything of true value. It's giving up the suffering and the miserableness of following a thought system that's really tyrannical and you know, incredibly destructive. And it may or may not result in having everything on the world's terms go the way that us as individuals, you know, we as individuals want them to go. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't be peaceful. And I think, again, it's looking at the ego's interpretation of things that gets us into so much grief and you know, makes our mental state so miserable, because we interpret things in a way that really does not make us happy campers at all. And that's I think the transition. I like to think of particularly the workbook lessons as, you know, you start with the first one and recognizing that you know, beginning to erode the fabric of the idea that the ego has something to offer and that there's some kind of meaning to its madness. And after the end of 365 lessons, you can almost see like a progression. If you like take a little chart where if you plot time on the bottom axis and essence or identity, you know, identification on the vertical axis, you know, we start out with 100% ego, and then at some point partway through, you know, we shift. I mean, if we were to do this a perfectly you know, mathematically, I don't know, whatever progression kind of thing. You can almost picture how midway somewhere through the course, there would be that pivot point where you kind of like 50-50, you know, about half the time identified with ego and half the time with Holy Spirit. And then at the end, you know, it's basically, there's a lot of things that seem like affirmations where, again, it's the recognition that, okay, predominantly at some point our awareness will be identified with that understanding of interconnectedness, of true relationship of our mind to every other mind, and that there really isn't anything outside ourselves. And at that 100% point, you know, that's where Jesus says that God takes the final step. So, you know, I think so in a sense, the workbook lesson is sort of symbolic, and we get to see the progression that happens in the mind, but it's usually not linear like that because we jump around all over the place, and we have, I mean, looking back on the 30 plus years that I've been studying the course, I realized, you know, I've gone through tremendous fluctuations, including a long gap between like about 87 or so through to 2007, where I hardly picked up the books at all for the better part of 20 years. And then finally picking up Gary's books and realizing, wait a minute, there's a lot in here. 10 years ago, you know, and then it's like, oh, I think I need to read this stuff again. But you know, just watching that progression, seeing how, you know, and initially it's just like, oh, could it be that there's an identity that's different from this little finite persona and body that I think I am, to where, you know, somewhere farther along, we recognize, wow, that identity really was not working for me, and that was keeping me in a predominantly miserable state. And I think you know, if we still find ourselves in a you know, early questioning, say we can look forward to, and I think we're inspired by our future self, if you will, our true self, really reaching back through time, not within time, but through it, from the eternal self again. And then that's the symbol that we call Jesus or the Holy Spirit or inner kindness teacher, that then, you know, brings us, you know, essentially we're pulling ourselves out of that dream, out of space and time, into the awareness that we never left that perfect oneness. And we do that through using the specifics of our classroom moment to moment, and find that peace that we've been looking for more.
Absolutely. And I love your analogy of our actually, it is our real self, our true self, who's reaching out to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like a stranger.
Right.
It's, you know, when you were talking about that, you mentioned that, I was thinking about Gary and Art Nipursa.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in that particular case, as it does say in the Manual for Teachers, they were able to come to him in form, because he had done enough work that he was able to accept that, and he wasn't terrified of it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
A lot of people who don't know Gary Renard, and I know there's a lot of people who don't, and who have a lot of ideas about him. He was a meditator for years and years. Mm-hmm. He had been working on his own mind for years and years and years before he was presented with a manifestation of his future self. But literally, that was the future self, the self that had already gone through all the things, had come to the point where they were, you know, complete awareness and joined with God, and able to, you know, then come back to him and say, you know, look, you know, here's the truth about what you are and what's going on. And you are going to write books about it, and when you write these books, people who have been studying the course for years are going to read them and say, "Oh my God, that's what this course is all about." And that was literally his future self reaching out to him. That's what's happening with you and me too.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, mm-hmm. Our true self is reaching out to us and saying, you know, here, come on, come with me, hold my hand, let me show you what you are. And what you are will tell you of itself, basically. It really is it is the truth and reality reaching. So that's what the whole thing about, you know, I was saying that Christ in you is not asleep. It doesn't need to be awoken. What really needs to happen is you need to wake up yourself to the awareness of that. And it could be, you know, it is, because it is, we are all the Christ. So it is the Christ who's reaching out to us through the cracks in the world, the cracks in our world, that's letting the light get in. So how about I go on to the next paragraph?
Please do.
Excuse me. Okay. So let's see. A parallel to this is found in his description of prayer as a ladder. See the Song of Prayer pamphlet, section 1, the ladder of prayer. The bottom rungs of the ladder are marked by our pleas for help and our needs and problems. But as we find ourselves attracted to the loving source of the answers, our perception of what we think we need changes. Now we grow increasingly vigilant for what stands in the way of our experiencing that love all the time. With all of our seeming problems fading in significance, we recognize that our only need is to awaken from the dream of separation. The only real need to be fulfilled in time, according to text chapter 13. So the dream of separation is the only real need, the only real need to be fulfilled in time. Text chapter 13, section 8, 7, 16, 6. See also text chapter 13, 4, and text chapter 24. We should be careful though, not to skip steps and pretend that we are in the higher rungs of the spiritual ladder when we are not. It is humbling indeed to be told that we are in the infancy stage of salvation, which he tells us in text chapter 19, section 4, 3, which is, these are the obstacles to peace. So it's the third obstacle. But that humility is required if we are going to hear the answer to our call for help. And so, again, that's a whole thing of, you know, the answer is here, and I'm not hearing it because I'm yelling too loud, I'm making too much noise, and I'm obscuring the gentle voice of the Holy Spirit, which is right there all the time telling me that all is well and everything is okay. But until I get over believing it, and I think that's, you know, really a lot of, and I do see it, and I'm not going to point out people because we all see it and know it, and, you know, you, when you see it and you know it, you have two choices. You can either condemn them or you can look within yourself to see how you're doing it too. Right. And,
like Doug says, if you spot it, you got it, right?
You spot it, you got it. And it's absolutely true. If I see that happening, it's because I'm doing it. So I don't need to go and correct another person. That's why, it's impossible to correct your brother. You can only correct your own mind or allow your own mind to be corrected. So, you know, I see all that stuff and, you know, think that somehow or the other, that defines the person or says what level they're at and it seems to be different than where I'm at, then, you know, I think Jesus is telling me, hey, you know, you're mistaken. There's no difference between where you are and where they are. We're all on the bottom of the ladder.
One of the things that Ken Wapnick says that I really find helpful too is, he says, the instant you find yourself feeling the least bit victimized or any kind of, you know, quality of martyrdom or self-pity, any of those kind of thoughts or feelings, that's a huge clue that you've landed with a thud, you know, at the bottom of the ladder, and you need to just start that first rung again and pick yourself up and you know, start climbing back up again, because that's really – you know, the ego's bread and butter is, and its whole foundation, and its whole propaganda for keeping us anchored to this world and to, the specifics of the world is the idea of victimhood. Because if our identity begins to shift to one of a being that's not dependent on particular situations or circumstances, then we're no longer a victim. We're no longer at the mercy of, but we're instead able to be merciful to ourselves and everyone around us, because everyone around us really is us, because we're no longer identified with that, that dream figure, that character in the movie that we so carefully rehearsed and you know identified with so thoroughly that we. But that character really, the whole basis for that character is one of being at the mercy of things outside. And if you watch just about any movie, you know, just about any script, there's usually some kind of setup where it's, okay, this character is, you know, battling the rest of the world or parts of the world or, mm-hmm. or some, you know, there's always some aspect to being victimized by something outside. And you know, and if there's multiple characters in the story, then it's usually, you know, the battle is waged between those seemingly separate characters rather than the mindful awareness and recognition that no, that those are just roles that have been assumed, very elaborate roles, way beyond Academy Award winning performances, but yes. But you know, with the holographic projection system that makes anything that we do with our movie technology seem trivial, but it's a technology of the mind that has made us into these victim characters, and we can use that same technology to unmake it. And I think that's the technology of forgiveness that we're being given in A Course in Miracles and other spiritual disciplines that touch on that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's just the recognition. I mean, these characters are totally innocent, and have absolutely the character has no motivation to do anything other than what's in the script.
Right, right.
So, you know, they're not even motivated. They don't suddenly have a decision of their own that they're going to use to, attack you or make you feel good or anything. You know, there's no, again, I was talking last night, I think, about, understanding the metaphysics of a course. If you understand the metaphysics of the course, you recognize that there is no sinner and there is no sin. There's no wrongdoing and there's no wrongdoer. Mm-hmm. And so, here's another judgment on my part. I see people who have been studying the course for many, 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 many years still attacking other figures in the dream as if they thought they were real. And, you know, that says to me, you know, this person doesn't really understand what A Course in Miracles is saying, as far as this personal, who is this personal being, who are these personal beings that we are communicating with. They're not. They're only ourselves. You know, whatever communication, you know, I see it so much here in my family because there's a lot of turmoil that goes on in my family. And,
unlike everyone else's, of
course. Unlike everyone else's, who all have perfect them. Well, what I do recognize, though, that it is the same level of turmoil that is everywhere in every family, mm-hmm. and no wonder people are so stressed out and upset and worried and afraid all the time because they're looking at a very, very fearful picture. And yet, when I look at it and recognize that it's all a part of the script, these are characters acting out their parts, they're fully convinced that what they're doing is real and they're terrified. You know, I, on the other hand, am not fully convinced. Okay, let's just put it that way. I'm not fully convinced, and therefore, I recognize that there is something else going on here. I am in a position where knowing that it's like I'm trying to think of some place where there'd be a lot of chaos, maybe
the world.
In the world, yeah. but supposing you were in the circus, you were at the circus, and one of the lions got loose.
Supposing
you were at the circus, and one of the lions got loose and was ramping out into the crowd. And the trainer of the lions knows that, A, The lions have breakaway teeth, so if they bite you, their teeth are just going to break away, and they're not going to actually be able to harm you. They're like big kitty cats, and they just want to be loved and hugged and cuddled. Their growling is their communication of, oh, I'm so glad to see all these people here who are going to be kind to me, you know. And the lion is bounding out into the crowd. Well, the crowd, not knowing that about this lion, not knowing the lion's personality or its breakaway teeth, are terrified. But you, the lion tamer, who is in charge of all this and made all this occur with this lion being this gentle creature instead of the terrifying animal that everyone thinks it is, you, the lion tamer, knows that there's nothing can go wrong. Nothing is going to be harmful. But nobody else in the crowd knows that. Well, that's what we are. We are the lion tamer who knows that the lion has no teeth. We are the lion tamer that knows that the lion means no harm and cannot hurt you. And so if I go out into that crowd and I get caught up in their hysteria and start believing that the lion's going to hurt me, then I'm of no use whatsoever. I'm just another panicked citizen. Mm-hmm. But if I can maintain my own sanity and my own knowledge of this creature who seems to be so terrifying, then I can regain control of the creature. I can reestablish peace in the circus tent. I can bring about a total change in the experience for everyone in the entire arena by taming the lion in such a way that it's shown to be harmless. So, you know, that's how I look at myself. You know, I know it's really a rough, high standard for me to set for myself, but I don't see any reason why not. I am that lion tamer. I do know that that lion is harmless. I do know that nothing can go wrong. So my job is to go out into that arena and, by my own state of peace and love and joy, reestablish peace and love and joy amongst the crowd. So, you know, that's how I see myself. I'm a calm center of peace. You know, I walk through the world bringing about joy and peace. I walk through the world bringing about gentleness. You know, I'm doing these things that Jesus tells us that a teacher of God is and has. I'm honest. I'm gentle. I'm basically fearless, whatever. When I'm able to represent that, then that is, Jesus walked through the world like that. That's how Jesus walked through the world. He wasn't saying, run, the lion's going to get you. He was saying, the lion has no teeth. And
there is no lion.
There is no lion. Yes.
And there's no body to attack the lion.
Yes, yes. Eventually, yes, exactly. We come to that. So, you know, this is the, you know, if I'm a teacher of God, if I'm a student of Course in Miracles and a teacher of God, and I'm running around panicking, oh my God, what are we going to do? Trump's president now. You know, what are we going to do? That, you know, the Russians are taking over. I don't have those thoughts. I don't have those fears. Because I know the truth. And if I add to those thoughts and fears with other people, all I'm doing is yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah. The decision maker obviously can choose against the identification with the little s self that has those thoughts. I think it's helpful to remember that we're not going to, the ego as a thought system never diminishes. What diminishes is our investment in that identity over time. And I think that's where that transition takes place, that, you know, the workbook symbolizes of 100% identification with ego to 0% over the course of 365 lessons. But it's like we were talking about, it's not really a linear process, but we can gradually let go of the compulsion to identify with that dysfunctional thought system, and we leave it mentally. As you were talking about a few moments ago, Lynn, I was thinking about one of the comments that was made in one of Carlos Castaneda's books years ago. Of, you know, what if somebody came at you with a high-powered rifle and stalked you, you know, if, you know, like a sniper, and the sorcerer that Carlos Castaneda was studying with, I can't remember which one it was of several. He said, "Well, I just wouldn't be there." And I was thinking, well, that's actually sounds like a flippant answer, but in a sense, if you take that on a level of the mind, that's a really good answer, and it kind of ties into, you know, Ken Wapnick's comment of, you know, when you discover you're in the desert, you leave, you know, and and I think that it's obviously not a literal leaving. It's not a geographic thing. It's a mental thing, and we leave it by leaving the thought system that suggests that our identity is in the world. And if we are no longer identified with what changes, but we gradually identify with what is eternally true, and we do that by identifying with our shared interest and the kindness that we can contribute and be part of with each other, that shared identity then begins to replace the seemingly separate identity that we think we've been, and then we're not there. We're not no longer in that place of vulnerability to the vicissitudes of time and space.
Exactly.
But we get that way by trusting that inner kindness teacher, and I think that's where, you know, it's important to keep holding the hand. I really like a lot of Susan Dugan's writing. I'm just about, I think, one little short story away from finishing her third book about The Course in Miracles. That very well written, wonderful little short stories. If you haven't checked out her work, it's quite brilliant, and it's very engaging, a lot of fun, and she always ties into, you know, the course via her personal life episodes, and which lead inexorably to awareness that you know, we never left. And it's you know, it's good to remember that we can use anything, and you wouldn't have to write short stories about it, but we can, as she does very eloquently and humorously, but we can look at every little episode that seems to happen in our life as a reminder to get back to our mind, and to get back to specifically the decision making point of our mind, and choosing the Jesus or the Holy Spirit or the inner kindness teacher that symbolically represents that awareness we took with us into the dream to awaken from it. And so do you want to read the next paragraph?
Sure. And I just want to let you know, I have been actually reading Susan, not reading, listening to, I downloaded a talk that you did with Susan Dugan on Lesson 303 and about Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been playing that here in the room, and it was
really
good. It's sweet to hear her voice. So I'm going to have to try to get her to come here again and share with us.
Sure, she would welcome that.
She's been here before. I do have her on my Skype, so I know I've talked to her in the past on Skype as well. So if you talk to her, say, hey, you know.
I'll do that. And Lynn Corona and Tim Wise and Whitney and all the folks there at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. There's a lot of really, you know, tuned in teachers that really have particularly, you know, really get a lot of Ken Wapnick's material and share from that understanding. So that's kind of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So let's see. Whose turn is it to read? Mine or yours?
I think it's yours.
Okay.
Not that it matters.
Okay. So, let's see. We're in
a parallel to this, right?
Spiritual maturity on the Course's path involves the recognition at some point that Jesus is really a symbol of the contents of our right mind and that we have split off. And, that's just about it. And, there's Prudence in the room saying hello. That's so sweet. I love you, Prudence. Thank you so much, honey. So Jesus is really a symbol of the contents in our right mind that we have split off. Because of this dissociation, our only access to our right minds usually is to first relate to Jesus as a person like us, a loving brother devoted to teaching and helping us. as we allow him to show us that we have been wrong about everything, especially about who we think we are, we begin to realize that everything is going on only in our minds. And really, isn't that just amazing to come to the point where you recognize that everything that's going on is really going on in your own mind? And I see that, and what I do is I don't just see that, I actually call upon that. I call upon that to be my constant reminder of what's going on. And when I call upon that, guess what? It actually does change my mind. It actually does shift my mind. So, calling upon the Holy Spirit, or calling upon Ho'oponopono, or calling upon whatever it is that I call upon, that's what helps me. So as we allow him, or whatever you choose, your inner kindness teacher or Jesus or the Holy Spirit, as we allow him to show us that we have been wrong about everything, especially about who we think we are, we begin to realize that everything is going on only in our minds, which means that we begin to relate to everything as symbols of the choice we have made in our minds to identify with separation as reality, or with oneness as reality. Our experience of both Jesus and ourselves will then change. We must gradually move beyond the perception of separate bodies relating to one another if we will remain asleep, or we will remain asleep and dreaming, living as aliens in a world that is not our home. So really, seriously, that's the choice we have. Is to listen to the Holy Spirit, or listen to our ego. And when we decide to listen to the Holy Spirit or to Jesus or whatever, we gradually do move beyond this perception of separate bodies relating to one another. And we do that by not accepting what appears to be the mistake, not looking for the log in my brother's eye, not expecting that I'm going to find sin and guilt wherever I look, but actually expecting that I'm going to find the truth. And when I decide that that's what that's the only thing I want, then guess what? That's going to be the only thing I see. But coming to that point where I've gone beyond my own mind can perceive, and look for a truth that's beyond that, and then accept that truth and then live that truth. You know, there's quite a few steps that need to go on. It's like my mother used to always say, there's been many a slip 'twixt the cup and the lip. Which basically means, you know, drunk people tend to spill their beer. But but I always think those words. There's many a slip 'twixt the cup and the lip. I always think those words because it really does say to me that that what I think is true is really just a story that I'm telling to myself. So.
Quite an elaborate one that we've been telling ourselves, isn't it?
It is elaborate, yes, and ridiculous. Elaborate, ridiculous story.
But a finite dream, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Finally, I got this Robert Adams quote posted in the room that Dove sent me. How do you see yourself? What do you think you are when you think about yourself? Do you think you are a separate entity, striving, fighting for existence, trying to become enlightened? This is a great mistake. Everything that you can ever imagine that you want to be, you already are. You are the imperishable self that has always been, that you always will be, beyond birth, beyond death, beyond experiences, beyond doubts, beyond opinions, beyond whatever it is your body is going through. Whatever thoughts your mind thinks, you are beyond that. You are the silence. The silence of the heart. And that's from Robert Adams, The Silence of the Heart.
Nice.
So, yeah, everything, you forget this world, forget this course, and, come empty your hands.
I just, speaking of posting in the room, I know you're on Paltalk right now, and I'm just going through Skype, but if you want, I've just posted the four links of things we've talked about in the Skype window, if you want to post those in the room, too,
for anybody who's
listening, yeah. And I'll put those in the ACIM blog post that I make from our recording, of course, too.
Okay. Oops, yeah. No, I just posted the same thing again, so I need to go back and recopy. So,
did we finish that paragraph?
We finished that paragraph, and we're ready for the last paragraph, which is telling us where to go.
Okay, I'll finish this off then. All of this is pulled together in Kenneth's Lighthouse article, Our Equality with Jesus, a Child, a Man, and then a Spirit. And that's from, about 12 years ago, huh? In December 2004, a copy appears on our website collection of newsletter articles, and that's on facim.org. And there's just a wealth of wonderful material there, as there is on hcim.org, of course, the sister organization for the Foundation for Inner Peace. Another helpful resource is our tape CD set, Jesus, Symbol, and Reality, in which Kenneth focuses on the growth from spiritual childhood to spiritual maturity. Chapter 17, An Absence from Felicity, also presents this spectrum in the context of Helen Schuckman's experience of Jesus. And I've been listening to more of Ken's audios that he was talking about in one of the ones I listened to recently about Helen, how, you know, she came from an interesting place where it came through her but wasn't for her in that particular lifetime, you know, as much as I think it is for a lot of us that are students of it. So she was able to very clearly convey the essence of that teaching. But there's a lot of ways that she didn't apply it to herself at all. And Ken was commenting how, you know, she would be incredibly insightful, in one moment, but when she tried to focus on specifics, as he pointed out in Absence from Felicity, she would get things very, very wrong. You know, she would, for example, would try to predict, her own mortality and those of, Bill and her husband and different people and just had it, you know, completely off. But when it came to, you know, conveying the non-dual essence of the course, you know, she was right on, spot on all those things. But whenever she tried to apply it to specifics, you know, the mileage would vary wildly. And I think that's a great reminder to all of us is when we try to, again, apply this awareness to the dream, you know, well, all bets are off because we're again asking Jesus metaphorically to come down and fix the movie. Well, the movie's already in the can for one thing, and the other thing is it's a movie. Why would you want to, you know, change the movie when you could walk out of the theater, and that's what Jesus is saying. You know, there's a real world outside this theater in your mind that you've been so, you know, enthralled with for lifetimes that, you know, you might want to try, you know, using what's on the screen as your classroom to get back to your mind. And then, you know, when you're in the desert and you realize you're in the desert, you leave. Or when, you know, Carlos Castaneda's teachers, you know, if you find that you're being stalked, you choose not to be there, you know.
Exactly.
You give up on the self-abuse. Go ahead. Yeah.
I just thought of this, and Dances wrote it right in the room right when I thought about it. The allegory of the cave. Plato's cave is that movie. The cave is that movie theater.
Yeah.
And we can just sit there in the movie theater and watch the movie. It's the shadows on the wall. We can watch it. We can watch it. But we can watch it. But until we get up and walk out of the theater, we're not going to see the bright light of day. We're not going to see the truth. So I love that. And I'm not going to go into a big tirade here because we don't have time and I don't really want a tirade, but I do want to say that, there are many teachers out there, and I'm saying out there, there are many teachers in here, who come into the Paltalk room, who are doing that very, very thing. They're in the cave, they're in the movie theater, and they're saying, I know there's a door. I know there's a way out. I know there's a world somewhere else. I just don't know. you know, I think if we chanted or if you said this words over and over you know, maybe if you thought about it this way, you'd think about, you'd imagine a door and a door would show up, or, you know, they're just keeping us in the theater. Mm-hmm. And a good teacher, someone who I really love, just announced yesterday that they're going to start a whole new series of teachings in January. And I read their description of what they're going to be doing. I'm like, this is a description of how to stay in the theater, how to be more comfortable in the theater, how to get more popcorn while you're in the theater, how to have endless drinks while you're in the theater. All this is doing is keeping you in the friggin' theater. You know, when this teacher knows that the theater is not where it's at, and they're not helping people by keeping them in there, and yet they think they're helping people because they're making them feel more comfortable in the theater.
There's an endless supply of red vines in the jungle of the mind, right?
Yes.
But maybe we'll want to climb to the mountaintop from the jungle at some point, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And swing on the vines, right? Instead of munching on them.
The red vines. And Devin says, I have used the door and know exactly where it is and how to use it again. I don't want to. And that's another thing, is the people who know where the door is and just don't want to go through it, because once you go through it, you're out of the theater.
Game over.
Game over.
Flashes across the screen. Exactly.
And you know, if you've been in one of those theaters where there's multiple theaters, you can go from one to the other to the other to the other in between the movies. You can see all the movies you want if you know how to get around in the theater. But you can have endless movies going on.
You can see all the movies you want at Alice's Endless Cinema Restaurant, right?
Exactly.
How about that for mixing metaphors? Maybe it's time to...
It's time to go for Devin and Barb.
I will post all those links on the ACIM blog post.
All right.
I get the audio in. I think I still need one from you for last week, and I'll just put those two together.
And then
I want to wish everyone a really wonderful... day after Festivus, Christmas Eve, and Christmas, and Happy New Year in advance, and lots of love to everyone.
All right, I love you, Bruce. Merry Christmas to you as well, and we'll see you New Year's, or see you before New Year's. So,
yeah, looking forward to it. Have a great week.
All righty, bye bye, guys. Bye bye, Bruce. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Devin and Barb.